this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Lone Oak Bay Station Jacks, I'm Tom Allen. Greg Pappas in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 25. Nasdaq Futures up 143. Buy the dip, Greg. Buy the dip. Did you buy the dip? Are you long spool?
No, I was busy watching the Super Bowl.
I just am happy that PTI didn't have a commercial in the second half.
Nobody was watching?
Nobody was watching. Mean,
I was watching. I was celebrating.
Why?
I don't know. You got to get something else besides Patrick Mahomes every once in a while.
You know, I could see you. Do we have Kevin?
Yeah, you do. I was dipping the chip.
Well, there you go. I could see you two guys as a couple of Philly fans.
I'm surprised, though. They didn't really ride Saquon the way I thought they would. But 25 carries.
That's because they pretty much shut down the run, and the third down conversions killed them in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't getting anywhere running, and all of a sudden the guy's throwing all over the place because they were so worried about stopping the run, and the quarterback beat him.
Whole bunch of right place, right time, Devonta Smith.
Yeah. It was
A.J. Brown, you know, they each, I think, had, only three or four receptions, but those were solid, you know, great timing and a couple of touchdowns.
When was the last time you saw Mahomes throw a 10-yard pass, like 5 yards short, like he did about 8 times yesterday?
Oh, well.
What's the matter with him? Did somebody yank his arm off before the game or what, Kevin?
I think there were people, I think he was under incredible pressure the whole game. In a couple of cases, he was, you know, even though he wasn't getting hit high, there was all kinds of action around his feet. I think the big lesson from yesterday is there's a reason it's really, really hard to repeat, let alone three-peat. And when it comes to Super Bowls, is because you have to beat really good teams to do it.
Yep.
And you can't beat really good teams every single time.
I really thought that the teams that had the best personnel were the Ravens and the Eagles. Yeah, I thought the Ravens' personnel was even better than Buffalo's, actually, especially on defense. But you know, they played.
Yeah, although I think the best personnel on the Eagles was Vic Fangio, I thought.
Well, yeah, but you know, when you have a, I mean, Kevin, you know more than anybody. It's all the guys up front. When you can get somebody sacked 6 times without a blitz, which means you've got 7 people in coverage, that's really hard for anybody. You know, I'm sorry, that's really hard. I mean, you haven't seen a line versus line beatdown like that since the Bears whipped up on New England. That was even more of a beatdown. They just couldn't stop anybody. I mean, it was the entire front four on the Eagles just buried the guys. You know, pretty scary.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch for a while, and then it was boring to watch, and I got some work done then.
Well, there you go. I was at my bros for the first half, and I was thinking maybe stopping someplace in the second half, and I said, screw it. I just went home and started looking up stuff for the show. I mean, I watched some of the end run, but I didn't see the last couple touchdowns that KC scored, but they didn't really mean anything anyway, so... What'd you make of this this thing? And well, we had all kinds of stuff to talk about. let's talk about this McDonald's earnings, and then we'll talk about the Nevada sports books. But what does this McDonald's
say? Hey, just as an FYI, I'm driving. I might hit a dead spot along the way, but let's go.
Just don't hit
McDonald's earnings, I thought, was interesting.
What are you? I mean, they're same store sales. The company's domestic restaurants fell 1.4% in the quarter. I'm going to say that. You know, it's so hard to tell. I don't know if you ever go into McDonald's.
Wait, it was expected, what, 286? What'd they report?
Oh, they reported their earnings report was right on it. Their revenue report was short.
I mean, they're up 2% this morning.
Everything's up. I mean, buy the dip. Money means nothing, Greg, except like to people like you and me and Kevin.
I don't know what that means.
It means that...
meaningless to me.
It means if you've got it, it's just... What difference does it make? If it stacks up, you know... $100 billion in value in one day. What's the difference? I mean,
It looks like they're up about 5.5 in McDonald's right now.
Yeah.
So, and you said the earnings missed.
No, earnings hit. Earnings was right on expectation, but revenue was short. And that's why I say I think it's interesting because, and McDonald's is, you know, one of those companies that I think you look at as an indicator of what's going on in the economy. Their prices are high. I don't go there, but I know comparables like Culver's or something, or Portillo's or whomever, and so I know their prices are way up, and yet their revenue's down. What must their volume be? So I think a lot of fast food stuff that, you know, normal average families would do normally is getting curtailed. And that's not good.
Well, it says here, McDonald's said traffic was slightly positive, but customers spent less than usual during the quarter. Once in a while, I mean, maybe once a week, if I'm driving, I'll pile in there for a coffee or something. And it's.
I mean, they should have been around $3 a share. That's solid enough for me. I mean,
well, okay, but that's $12, right? A year.
I think for 2023, they were around nine some billion for earnings.
Okay.
Yeah. But Greg, I think they're used to increasing revenues year over year. And they, you know, to me, that's just, I'll be interested to see if a lot of other discretionary retail businesses have the same phenomenon.
Well, this is what's so hard to figure about these guys. And Russell, you can talk to Russell more on Wednesday, because Russell's going to McDonald's like 3 days a week for the last 25 years and always gets the exact same thing. So he can tell you exactly what the prices are going up. Otherwise, it's very difficult to find out. I mean,
eggs are more expensive now. They probably buy a lot of those. Well, those are like, yeah, I think the last thing since
that's time the last
I
two
saw.
Weeks.
Oh. Well, the last time I saw they were somewhere around $7.
Oh, you didn't go yesterday. They're higher.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's... That's way up.
But
it's,
I mean,
like
here's
five times.
But here's my, McDonald's said traffic was slightly positive, but customers spent less than usual. Over the summer, the chain rolled out a $5 combo meal to bring back price-conscious diners and reverse sluggish sales. The strategy worked, helping McDonald's same-store sales tick up in the third quarter. However, analysts have warned that value meals only work if customers also add other items that aren't discounted. I mean, they have the dollar menu, which is now mostly $1.99. But they also have, I mean, if you just went in and got your regular stuff, it is not cheap at all. I mean, we're not far away from a cup of coffee was $1. Was that 2 years ago? And now, what are they, $2.50? I mean, they're gaining on it. And I'm not worried so much about McDonald's as I am what it says about the economy around them, wouldn't you say, Kevin?
And yeah, I agree with that. That's the point I was trying to make, not necessarily artfully.
Well, it's hard to read into this stuff. I mean, it really is, but... But if you start talking about if your prices are up 8 or 10% and your same store sales are down, it doesn't show you a healthy consumer, right? Or does it?
Yeah, and Carl took some numbers apart too a couple of weeks ago and kind of drew that same conclusion that a lot of the discretionary stuff is their volumes are down, and we know their prices are way high. Bars, restaurants, things like that. You know, we know. That the prices are substantially up, and yet the revenues related to it is down across the economy.
I don't know. So I think you guys are freaking out about no reason.
What do you think? Where do you think
it's
different?
I'm not freaking out. Let's not overstate that either.
I think like McDonald's revenue, to take a bad year, call it 2020, and look at kind of what they did, you know, around $20 billion in revenue. They're definitely 25 or 26 now, and the earnings are probably double what they had in 2020.
Well,
so
I don't think there's any question, Greg, that McDonald's is capable of raising their prices faster than their costs. That's the whole point. When people gain market power, that's why I don't like it so much. Other some people don't. Some people do. Some people have market power that maybe they don't even know they have until they have it. McDonald's is...
Well, no, my point would be the revenue is not only up, but the earnings are up, too, from...
What do you suppose the prices are compared to 2020? Double?
I don't know if they're double, but their earnings are close to double. So.
I you know, there's somebody, Russell could probably tell you, but I'll ask him on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But all right, hey, guys, you're gambler guys. What do you make of this? I didn't realize that people were this predictable. Well, I guess maybe I didn't trading-wise, but interesting articles here. Well, first of all, you're ahead of Sunday, your state of Illinois did something for you. They made the different bets permanent. You can't
prop bets.
Well, some prop bets are the board temporarily banned certain prop bets in October at the request of the NFL, allegedly. Why would they just ask Illinois? The game board will continue to allow wagering on non-game day roster decisions, but the If a sports betting operation allows such bets, it could have its
Is that like Kalshi and FanDuel?
No. If you have a betting on NFL games, a kicker missing a field goal, replay results among several things being banned, they essentially don't want you to be able to bet on anything where an individual controls it, where somebody could rig it. You know, like whether the first play of the game will be a pass or a run, that kind of thing. Whether a kicker will make the kick or not, because the kicker decides whether, or the holder, they want to keep it somewhat from being rigged. If you can, you can't bet on whether a player is going to come out with an injury, that kind of thing. So there's about seven or eight of them listed. It's just sort of interesting. But what do you make of this Nevada sports books? For those of you who don't watch this stuff, the bettors take $2.1 million from Nevada sports books. NFL monthly win. That's crazy. You know, that in December, favorites won at a 78% clip and covered the spread at a 60% clip. And it most higher percentage of bettors bet the over and bet the favorite. Did you guys realize that? I mean, I guess I thought they would always try to make the numbers where they were even, sort of like a market maker, right?
Well, I think they do try, but it looks like it wasn't a good year for them.
Yeah, I mean,
or whatever they've been doing historically, you know, people are, you know, are bucking the trend, and they have to revisit what they're doing because, yeah, I think they do want to attract money on either side of the lines they set, but you know, if they're probably setting overs the same way they've always set overs. With the same kind of evaluation criteria, only to find out that the public still likes higher.
After week five, favorites hit at a 76% clip. Boy, that's something. Overall, that contributed to a little bit of a down year in pro football. And over the year, favorites covered 54% of the year. But get a load of this. NFL season started in record-setting fashion for Nevada. Upset-filled September, where they won $55 million on football. Their second-highest monthly win ever. And $81 million overall, their biggest monthly win ever. And then all of a sudden, all the favorites started winning. Is that great? You think that's because of straight bets or because of the parlay cards? Or people just picked the left side of the parlay card?
I mean, last year, I remember in the beginning of the year, 2024, they were saying that the casinos were booming. And they had their best year ever. And I mean... With the expansion into the new states and the new apps and all the new venues and like what you were talking about with different ways to put on prop bets and stuff, I can't imagine that slowing down at all.
Well, I don't
know. That's like the next evolution of their business.
Well, people bet the over just so they can cheer for every score? Or?
Probably.
I guess I would.
Well, probably, but you know, it's also possible that the Bears were underdogs just about every week, and so everybody was betting against the Bears, and that skewed the results.
that could be. You know, if you have reason why this is interesting to me and to Greg somewhat is when you're a market maker, that's essentially what you do. I mean, if you were to ask somebody, how could we make a market in like desk chairs? It's easy. Put your market up there, use my age here. The phone's going to ring, and if the first 10 people are all buying the desk chairs from you, you raise the market till half the time the phone's ringing, they're buying, half the time phone's ringing, they're selling. I mean, that's the essence of making a market, and that's what bookies essentially do. They set the line, and if everybody starts betting on one side, they move the line. But if you're a bookie in a bar, not the Rivers, let's just think, Greg or Kevin, If we're at Triply Tap, not to say they would ever take a bet, which I don't know if Nick does, but if all of a sudden we've got 50,000 bet on the Bears and 40,000 bet on the Lions, the bookie's going to take 10,000 of that, and he's going to call his buddy in Vegas and say, lay that off. So all of a sudden you're getting the 10% there, but you're paying the 10%. Okay, so that's a wash for you. And you're happy with your 10% on the other 80 grand because that's what a bookie does. He's not a gambler, although most of them probably don't do that, and they'll take the other 10,000. That's what means. That's why bookies go out of business. But I think in Vegas, if all of a sudden the line's 6.5, and somebody, if Caesars is 50,000 on the Bears, 10,000 on the Lions, I don't think Caesars can walk down the block to Bally's and put the other 40 down. I don't think they can do that. So the casinos are always.
Well, I mean, put yourself in the shoes of the Nevada Gaming Commission.
Yeah.
If they want that, you know, if they want it to be a competitive situation between casinos rather than a collusion, they have to prevent that kind of stuff.
So you could
have to make it illegal.
You could lower or move your line, hopefully that everybody comes run over and bets the Lions with you. But now you've got a bunch of bets out there at 5 and a bunch of bets out there at 7, which is another problem. You could lose both, right?
You could wind up losing them both. So yeah, I would imagine being an odds maker is not a very easy job. I don't think it's ever been an easy job, unless you were Jimmy the Greek, in which case you just didn't have to be right. You could just be famous.
Well, for years, Kevin, the person who put out the original odds used to come out of the Stardust, which is long gone, but that was the Chicago Mob Casino. Duh, go figure, right? That was essentially the Tony Spilotro story. He moved. Mm-hmm. And way back in the day, before you had computers, well, you always had computers, before you had desktops and laptops, there was a little room in the Stardust, maybe is narrower than our studio and a little longer, where in late in the afternoon on Sunday, they would go out and put, remember those old, what they used to call those, Kevin, the computer sheets with all the holes in the side? They would go put all the computer sheets from the day and all the stats in that room. And all these guys would pile in there and start writing down all the stats from that day, you know, what the halfbacks did and the fullbacks and the quarterbacks and everybody. And on Sunday night at 6 o'clock, actually it was a lady, at the Stardust would put out the opening line for the next week. There wasn't a Sunday night game, so they wouldn't include the Monday night game, but she would put the opening line out for the next week. And based on the initial movement, you know, betting on that line, it would move a half a point or a point or a point and a half. I was out there for a Super Bowl years and years ago. Minnesota started at 7-point dogs. By the end of the weekend, they were 5.5. So it does move. But it used to move pretty much out of the Stardust. There were only a few places that everybody would pile on with them. There was a Stardust that was the place next door to the Aladdin, one in a shopping center where people would do the big layoffs in there. The Stardust was first, then there was the Las Vegas Hilton. There were only a couple places that had sports books back in those days. And, you know, they have all the horse tracks, so you could go in there in the morning and bet, you know, 5-6 horse tracks all day if you wanted. A lot of people did that. They sat there and had hot dogs mm-hmm. and drank beers and did whatever. But I didn't think people were that, I don't know, I guess I would try and pick what I thought the points were, but 78% bet the favorites? That's crazy, isn't it?
That is. Let's put it this way. It's statistically improbable based on history.
Yeah.
So, So obviously it happened. So they have to, they either have to decide, is that a trend that's going to fall back to what historically has been true, or is that an adjustment that they have to make in how they set odds?
What if for the whole season?
That's always an interesting question when you get a statistical anomaly like that.
Well, when you see how good these guys are, it got to get you to another number here. Greg's Mr. Stats. Favorites covered 51% of the games.
Wait, you said it was Spilotro or what?
Tony Spilotro.
Okay, so Spilotro and Bugsy Siegel? Or?
No, and Bugsy Siegel, they were one of the last of a sports book.
Oh.
Bugsy, remember the,
and
remember
he got caught skimming, or what did
he? Yeah, I think he got caught. Uh-oh. He ended up in a shallow grave in Indiana with his couple
of
brothers.
Or at least Annette Bening was skimming in the movie.
Yeah. He was. Remember the movie or the TV show Crime Story? Ray Luca brought his group out of Las Vegas. That was essentially a Tony Spilotro story. He decided that with his, what did he say in a show? I remember it. The 707 jet aircraft is gonna make Las Vegas. People are gonna be able to go out there, and he tied together all the books in the country through Vegas. There was a place, Churchill Downs, next to the which is now the MGM, the Bally's used to be the MGM. Place had the fire. There was in the shopping center. There was a sports book. Greg, I was younger than you, I think. I go out jogging. I go in and I got my scratch in my pocket. So I want to put like 50 on the Cubs or something like that. And I walk in there and there's this massive line. And I'm going, what are all these people doing here at like 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning? And guys, I look in the front and I could see guys putting, you know, 3,000 on the Celtics, 5,000 on the Lakers. And I realized it was the day Magic and Bird were the sixth game of that series, the classic series back in the day. And all these people were laying off for books around the country. So I finally get to the front, and I go, 50 of the Cubs. The guy looked at me like I was a church mouse. what are you doing here, you idiot? Get out of the way. All these other guys are putting real stuff down. He took my bet, but, boy, the look on his face was like, what is the matter with you? I had no idea. But, I mean, you wouldn't believe the hundos that were in that place in the line in front of me. There wasn't a guy that was less than $3,000 or $4,000. The guys were counting them out that fast. Okay, receipt, next guy, next guy, next guy. I probably saw $100,000 on both sides in the 15 people ahead of me. It was unbelievable. They were just laying off, and that's what Ray Luca or Tony Spilotro did to the world. Pretty scary stuff.
Efficiency?
Yeah, well, yeah, it is. It's like having an exchange, yes. Right? It's like having an exchange.
You know, the old mob was a lot of things evil, but it was really good with efficiency.
Well, I'm surprised when we talked about...
It was really the next generation after that that started to turn into the meatheads that got them caught. Royko used to write about this all the time when he was alive, about the new wave, the generation afterwards, and how kind of stupid and lazy they were.
Well, my brother Dan, who you guys both know, the president of PTI Securities, and now a terrific president of in this industry. In his earlier life, he was a CPA. Well, I guess he still is. What's a CPA? Always a CPA, huh, Kevin? He did audits.
Yes, except for his personality has grown since his CPA days.
That's true, a little bit. Now that he started,
I hope Dan. I'm sure Dan's listening and chuckling at that. I hope.
But one of his audits. I think he was Ernst & Young. I don't know. He went to one of those places. One of their audits was the Central States Teamsters Fund.
And always fun.
Well, you know what? A lot of their loans were to Las Vegas casinos. So by far, they were the best performing loans in their book. By far.
I'm sure they were.
There weren't any of them that were no good. Remember how people used to complain
about...
They had
earnings and cash flow.
Yeah. The casinos always paid. I mean, everybody always bitched about how, hey, you're lending money to like Caesar's Palace. When did Caesar's Palace ever renege on a deal? But, Greg, you mentioned how good these guys are. Favorites covered just the whole year. I mean, September was one way and December the other. Favorites covered 54.1% of the games. Which means these guys are pretty close with the spread. This season, for their highest cover rate since 2005, 58.9, and second highest since 1985, 55.8. That's pretty good, don't you think?
That is pretty good, but when you have, when you're winning 51 point something of the games, the favorites are winning that many, which is a, you know, might be about where you'd expect it to be, but 70 some odd percent, you know, what was the number, 72? 72 have bet that, then that can be a pretty big loss number.
Yeah, well, no, but in December, favorites won 72.1% of the games.
Oh, okay, so. So, yeah, because by December, the bad teams are pretty much beaten and they're going through the motions.
Yeah, it was
they may have fired several a couple of offensive coordinators by then, and maybe fired their head coach. And talking to you, Bears, talking to you,
yeah.
Raiders.
Oh, yeah. Well, one night, I love to play blackjack. I haven't played in a while. I'm playing in Caesar's Palace. They got the huge sports book next to us. And, of course, the... Not that I would ever do something like this. I'm playing at a table, Greg, where the dealer is drop dead gorgeous, right? Now, I don't know how I ended up at that table. Must have just been a random sort of thing. This guy next to me, I mean, literally, he's, you know, nervous as what, a long tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, and he's just going. So, but he knew the lady, and so finally he has to go to the men's room, right? So we stopped the game for guy's betting a lot. We stopped the game. She goes, "Would you guys mind hanging for a minute till Joe comes back from the bathroom?" So Joe wanders off, which I never saw before, but the bathroom's right there. Back he comes. So while he's gone, I said to the lady, "Why is this dude so nervous?" Me always being inquisitive. And she goes, "Well, that's easy. They had a bet at Vegas. I don't know if they still have it. And I think it was, Kevin, it was some bizarre thing. It was like $5 or $10, and you picked 15 games. And the prize was, you know, something huge, 25 grand or something, which, you know, back when 25 grand was a lot of money. And she goes, "He has 13 games in out of the 15. And I'm going, wow. Might have been more than 25. Might have been like 50. So, of course, he has like Oklahoma or somebody they covered. And he's got the Irish. His 15th game. I think Lou Holtz was the coach. And they go to play Air Force. And they're like 25-point favorites. And they win by like 21. So they skunked the guy. But he had... Both games went off at the same time. Now, and we know we have enough listeners to smart enough to know, hey, if you're down to your 15th game, I mean, what do? If you can get the same spread, you go bet all the money you can borrow and steal on the other side. So you at least win one side or the other. You essentially hedge your bet, sort of like buying puts against your stock, right? And so, but he couldn't do that because both games were at the same time. You know, which would have made it more difficult to do both of them. Because yeah.
That affects the odds.
Hey, I have to go. I have to go and turn you over to John. So right. I'll catch you on Wednesday.
So I don't think the guy was too. So that me being to kind of finish the story real quick, I go down to the cashier in Caesars, or not the cashier, the guy doing the bets down on the bottom. We used to give him to an individual. And I said, you know, this guy came real close. He goes, "Yeah, we were watching that." And I said, "How many times you guys pay off a year?" And he goes, "We've been doing this for 5 years. We've never paid off." That's how hard it is to do 15 things, right? Right, Greg?
Yeah, that's impossible. I mean,
well, those, it happens.
It happens. But you know, those you want to take those all day.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, do we have Jan?
You do. Good morning.
Morning. Well, there was when Maddie and I first started doing the show. I'm going to say, must have been like 2012. All of a sudden, the news was that the Vegas casinos had their worst weekend like ever. Not just the Vegas. The betting people had their worst weekend ever. The only time it's ever happened, Greg or Jan or Matt, was the entire left side of the parlay card won. So there's got to be, what, 20 or 25 games? How many are on a parlay card? 20? Maybe? I haven't seen a parlay card in so long, but there's way more than 10, right, Greg, on a parlay card?
Yeah.
So say 20. What's 2 to the 20th power, for God's sake?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's a number. To show you how much randomness is, I'm going to ask you two guys a question, then I'll actually go through the math. All the years and all the centuries people have been playing cards, has there ever been a well-shuffled deck that was exactly the same as another one?
2 to the 20th? Did I get that right? 1,048,576.
Something like
that,
yeah.
That's...
What about my deck of cards number? What do you think, Jen?
Ever been... Again, Tom, give me a question.
If you shuffle a deck of 52 cards, well shuffled, all the years that people have been paying cards, has there ever been two decks exactly the same?
Well, statistically, I mean, if you consider things like, you know, greasy thumbs and everything else, probably not.
Well, I'm saying, you would say, of course there has. How many hands of cards have I played in my life, for God's sake? But then you think about it. Well, you get the first one is 1 out of 52, right? Then the next one is 1 out of 51. The third one, what is it, a permutation or a commutation?
Permutation, yeah.
And all of a sudden, you start doing the math on that, and you go, how many billion are you up to? You know, 52 times 51 times 50 times 49, you're getting there, right?
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, maybe there hasn't been. And yet, you would think, you know, that kind of stuff happens. And the weird part of all this, by the way, by far the winning commercial yesterday was the Budweiser horse pushing the barrel. The Clydesdale, did you see that one?
No, I didn't see the game test.
Well, they head off with all the Clydesdale horses with the big thing of barrels of beer in it. And the Clydesdales have been gone for how many years, Greg? 10?
That was the pushing it through town and such.
And all of a sudden, the little horse is in the barn, and he sees one of the kegs fall off the back. So he dashes
the back
out,
of the wagon.
The back of the wagon. Yeah, so he hops over the fence and starts pushing the thing with his nose over a hill, through the town, into the bar. He pushes it into the bar, and everybody at the bar starts applauding the little guy, and he heads out. The cutest horse ever. The little Clydesdale colt.
The little Clydesdale that could.
Yeah, the little Clydesdale knew that keg was supposed to go to that bar, and off he went. And do you ever stand next to one of those horses? God, are they gorgeous. They're big.
Yeah. They're intimidating.
Mm. They are.
They're not as big as a Shire, but they're pretty friggin' big.
Spectacular animal.
I don't think you could ever really ride one. You know? Their back's about 5 feet wide.
I don't think I could get on one.
Oh, no, you definitely couldn't get up on one. Well, you'd have to have a little ramp, but if you fell, it's a long way.
An elevator.
Yeah, it's... All right, John, what'd you make of McDonald's earnings? What's that showing about society? Are we getting any moves on this? I mean, we've seen the market. Every time it goes down, everybody buys. It seems like money's pouring into the market. So I know I have trouble understanding it myself. When you start talking about a couple of days in the last few weeks, NVIDIA has had like a $600 billion day. You know, what do they have? They have how many shares they have outstanding? They have 54 or something like that, Greg?
That's what I'm talking about. And then big moves.
Yeah, so if they move, you know, 10 points, you know, it's almost $600 billion. And if you go back 10 years, we only had, what, two or three companies that were worth that, right? And now one can shake like that in one day. The amount of cash that's out there, at some levels, is just it's really something. And I don't know what it says for, you know, the market, the economy, and
if you look at the straddle for the whole month, you know, if you go 40 days out to March 21st or whatever, you can see that that's priced at $21 or $22. They're expecting it to move. $20.
Earnings are this week, aren't they?
I don't know.
Check and see with you. I think the.
I hope I don't have any options on earnings this week. Really?
Well, last week we had two or three. We've been.
Oh, Feb 26.
Yeah, so a couple.
Yeah,
weeks.
Feb 26 is Q4 2025 earnings.
Well, for those, this is not any kind of a strategy type of thing, but we do a lot of earnings plays, right? Try and piece together volatilities and stuff. And I'm going to say, in the last year, in the last few months, I've never seen such a stream of, okay, we're going back to sort of like the sports betting. You know, the people that are allegedly pros making these predictions. When you have a market.
And the pros are saying it's going to move $20 in a month.
Well,
I mean, $20 is exactly the same number. That
look at the date on the earnings. I'll bet they're almost $20 that day, too. In other words, they're almost as much between now and the 26th as they are to March.
Yeah, it's
anyway, the day before earnings, if you look at a stock that's trading $100, the $100 call and $100 put added together might be, say, 10, which is called a straddle. But if you look at that price, that is the market, the world's estimate of what the likely move is of the stock the next day, plus or minus, right, Greg?
Yep.
And a lot of the times, it seems like the market is, over a long period of time, market's pretty darn good. It's it's right within that range a lot of the times. Well, lately it seems like the market has lost total control of these things. We had two spreads on last week where they were 2 and 3 times straddles, where straddle would be $8, the stock moved like 25. That is somewhat unheard of. I mean, not that it doesn't happen, it can, but I would say over a decade, if you played the straddles on earnings day, played the straddles,
should win about 7 times.
Well, you would give a slight edge to the seller.
Yeah.
Because retail people really can't be short it.
About 68%.
But I'm going to say in the last year, I would have liked to have been long every one of them. It's probably the only year I can ever think of where being long it, again, we have to have Russell go through every one with the university computer, but I'm going to say you were a winner being long last year, and I can't think of any other year.
2000 probably. What you're talking about is the outsized impact of the Magnificent Seven, you know, quote Seven.
You're talking about that somehow between the market fabric and whatever, when people come out on these moves. What was the one last week? It was TTWO. It was up a bunch, and FTNT was up $30. The stock trades like 100. I mean, these are huge numbers. I don't know what it means. It's not political, I don't think. It's just somewhat market fabric. It's just maybe people aren't in the way. I don't think they're being front run.
Very, very comfortable and willing to put on bets that say, you know, we're not going to move as much this year as we did before, and they're just caught off sides a little bit more.
Well, yeah. So John, did you watch the games or no?
Nope. No, I'm so detached from the halftime entertainment, Taylor Swift phenomenon, all this stuff. I just feel like I'm the dinosaur that wandered into the room. So
you're not just a dinosaur; you're an old dinosaur.
Yeah, tell me.
I mean, you're not a young, sprightly dinosaur.
No. I'm a lumbering triceratops.
Yeah, what do you call those guys? The big guys just went along and ate plants all day? What do they call those guys? The
herbivore.
Yeah, the herbivore type of thing. I had to read something that said now at all the Canadian hockey games, everybody's booing through the U.S. national anthem.
That's pretty funny.
That's pretty tacky, you know.
I think that's funny.
I think it's kind of the... Trump was happy flying over the Gulf of America yesterday.
Yep.
Did they even show him on TV?
I didn't see him. I think saw Taylor maybe Swift once. A couple times.
Yeah, and Taylor Swift, who wasn't wearing her...
He was on the Jumbotron, I read, but I, you know...
Yeah, they were booing her.
Yeah.
So
a culture shift.
It's, We've somehow unleashed, the Eden people. People be happy, or I listen to people happy to say stuff they would never have said 6 months ago. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I wonder which is more expensive, the Taylor Swift tickets or the Super Bowl tickets.
Well, yeah. What she didn't seem like she had too many people in her skybox. She was kind of, maybe everybody else was up drinking because the game was so lost already. Because when you've never been in a skybox, some of them they're all different, but some of them have like 2 or 3 rows of seats in the front if you actually want to watch. Then if you don't really want to watch, there's a spot up in the back where the refrigerator and the food all is. So they showed her a couple of times where she was like, there was only like a couple of people in the front, or everybody else had already given up on the game. But she was intently watching. So you think he's going to retire, Kelsey? I bet he gives it another year after this fiasco.
That was the rumor. He's going to retire at the game or somewhere.
Well, they sort of did retire at the game, the whole team. You think Andy Reid's going to give it another year?
It's not worth it. Well, it's a lot of problems. I mean, you still got Mahomes. Worthy looked like a monster. So maybe, but you know what are you really looking for? He's got how many Super Bowl appearances? How many wins?
Well, people like to do. He likes what he's doing.
Yeah, that would be the reason. I mean,
well, the two interesting basketball stories this week. What's the guy's name? I can see his face. The cancer survivor, basketball guy, been around forever. God, what's his name? I'll think of it. He's had 4 different cancers. The guy's 85 years old. And we Google the guy's name. You know what I'm talking about, Greg.
What are we looking at?
He's been a basketball commentator forever, and he had cancer four different times. 60-something chemo treatments, and I'll find it here. I can't believe I can't remember the guy's name. Somebody's tweeting. Somebody help me out here. And Hubie Brown retired yesterday. He's been 91 years old.
Dick Vitale.
Yeah. And Hubie Brown retired yesterday. Talk about 91 years old. The guy looks great. He did a great job calling the game. Yeah, what else he get? I mean, 91's a long run, but just sort of interesting. The two guys. I mean, but Dick Vitale looked spectacular. I don't know how many surgeries the guy had. And,
good for him.
Yeah, good for him. And
he's got March Madness coming up.
But he spent Kevin, of course, mentioned that everybody cheered when Trump was on the video board with booed Swift. That's because you're going to get beat up if you don't. Now what's his name? Musk wants to impeach the judge that ruled against him. Is this a new world we're walking into here, Jen, or what?
Yeah, well, you know they're hovering over the target, Tom, when they go at stuff like this the way they do, though.
What target?
Well, the misspending and the fraud and the Fed and the Treasury, every cabinet position and their offices. But I think Treasury is a big one, and I can't see any reason why any judge would get involved in that. It's an executive decision. It's an executive role.
It's a dictator decision.
He's going after the Secretary of the Treasury, too.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Is this a dictator decision or what?
Well, it's a deep state, decision, I guess. But it's a holdover of the whole law era, which, I think most people want to put to rest.
They don't want
judges making these kind of decisions.
No, you don't want judges making any decisions. That's what judges do, right? Aren't you a lawyer?
Well, when judges you can pay off make these decisions, yeah.
Every one of these guys is paid off.
I think to some extent. When it gets into the Trump cases, yeah.
I don't even want to open up this can of worms.
That's my personal feeling.
If you believe that the entire world is screwed up against Trump, I guess that's is screwed up except Trump. That's
I got eyes and ears, Tom.
You bring somebody in who doesn't even have an elected position, and he's looking for people's records of people's on the Treasury. What exact position does this guy have?
Well, you got a judge telling the Secretary of the Treasury what that person can do. This guy's been confirmed.
Trump?
What he can do with his office?
I'm talking about Musk. Musk is the guy they don't want to give access to Treasury records because it's sensitive information.
Well, he's gone after the Secretary of the Treasury now. The judge has.
So
to me just tells me enough about what's going on.
Well, okay, but Jen, it's not enough.
Burn it down.
I mean, I had this conversation with Kevin yesterday, and I think all of us want to get to the same place. We want to have more efficient government, more about anything. But I think maybe when it's time to go, people will wave goodbye with their foot instead of their hand. I don't know. What sets us apart, in my opinion, is not what we do, but how we do it. I think everybody since dawn of man wants the criminal, wants the guys who steal for somebody else, wants them in jail. But there's a way to get somebody there that's uniquely American or maybe British American that sets us apart. And the idea, if it was you and me, I would hope that we would agree that we have inefficiency that comes into government over time, comes into education over time, could come into a trading firm over time, especially if it's successful and there's a lot of money around, right? It gets easy to do, and you stop watching the nickels. And all of a sudden, someday, when things aren't so good, you say, wow, people don't want to give us this many nickels anymore because they're not doing so hot and we're spending too many. I mean, economically, I get that. But I think the way to do these things is not with a very heavy-handed, these guys are all crooks, everybody's stealing money. The thing that appeals to the masses, if it was me, I would say, hey, we're going to go department by department, and I'm going to have three or four people from the Congress, two sides of the aisle on each side. We have a couple of people in the Congressional Budget Office, and there's going to be a couple of people from the executive branch that I get to put in there. And by the way, the group will elect the leader out of the group, who's ever the leader. And we want to start going department by department and saying, okay, what can we cut? What are we doing? What's our overlap? Nobody's been a bigger proponent of the of this consumer protection group. Day one, John, we were doing the show when that thing started. Day one, I said, you know what? This thing is duplicative of other people that are supposed to be doing the job and aren't. And we got to stop that. And the Comptroller of the Currency, the Fed, the FDIC are all supposed to be watching these banks. And now we really don't need somebody else because they're not doing their job with 15,000 people working there in a building and a human resources department and desks and God knows what else. We probably don't need them. Okay? But that doesn't mean you come in and vilify those people. Because they're all a bunch of crooks. They're stealing from you. Every federal employee is an ass. That's not my style. You know, would you and I together like to get to the right place? Yes, but turning one American against another, I think, is wrong. I really do. And bringing somebody in as your jackbooted guy to do it because nobody else you can trust, I'd hold Congress feet to the fire. I said, guys, this is your job. I'm going to give you one more chance. I'd call out Congress more than he did. I think our way of doing things is different, and we have to protect the process as much as we do the outcome. That's my feelings. That are, you know, and you can totally disagree with, say I'm nuts doing that. I mean if I loved watching Superman, the Lone Ranger. I love watching Gunsmoke. Those guys, you know, they were purer than Pharaoh's wife. The day Trump becomes my moral arbiter with his buddy Elon Musk is the day I happily go to my grave. It's just not me. But so it's not what they're doing, Jen. It's how they're doing it to me.
Now, what are the alternatives? I mean,
the alternatives is the.
Can you think of what a bipartisan investigative group composed of people in the House and Senate?
We deserve the chance. This country, we managed to have Simpson Bowles cut through all the crap and come up with something. And we didn't look at it. Maybe we should pull that one out of the drawer and see what they did. They probably already did the stuff already.
The best example I think of how things are done today, if you want to talk about process, you look at the January 6th committee, where there's no opposition whatsoever, just flew in the face of every, you know, House rule on forming a committee. And then you have a, you know, star chamber, television broadcast circus made out of it, all slanted in one direction, and then when they make their recommendations, then they destroy all the evidence. That's a congressional committee in a nutshell.
John, I'm not beginning for a second to say that they're having.
What I'm saying to them, that can't be a model.
Okay, the solution is a total jackbooted. One guy gets in there, gets his own guys. That's what Hitler did, for God's sake, John. I don't want that. If we can't go through the whole system and there's no way it works, then maybe someday I'll agree with you. But let's try it first.
Well, we've let it stay broken so long that we've run out
So the solution is...
We don't have too many opportunities.
Okay, so the solution is a Trump dictatorship.
Why do you say dictatorship?
Because he wants to bring in people that haven't been elected, and he wants to get rid of all the judges... Wants to do all this stuff. I mean, what are we doing?
He talked about impeaching a judge. Well, it takes votes to impeach anybody. So it isn't like he's going to remove him by the throat.
I don't like the fact that you call out people and all of a sudden the judge is afraid to go home. I don't like that.
Well, I don't like crooked judges either, Tom.
Everybody who agrees with Trump is not crooked. The fact is people did went into the Capitol, killed two people, and did a hell of a lot of damage. It's not like there was no guilt there, John.
Who'd they kill?
Weren't there a couple deaths?
Who killed who, Tom?
Oh, okay. Nobody would have died if they weren't in there.
Well, nobody would have been in there if they hadn't been let in.
Okay. I have a feeling, John, that if it was you and me out front...
This is exactly what the committee was trying to cover up, John. They did a pretty good job, but I think it's going to backfire someday.
Name me anybody of your moral background that if some idiot opened up the door to the Capitol, you know you're supposed to be in there, do you think you and I would have walked in that door? I'm saying no.
I was in favor of opening up the door.
Instead of breaking it down.
Just to be clear, I think that they probably, if they were to start fighting outside, that would have been worse.
What I'm saying, we would not have. We would realize. Wait a minute. We're not supposed to be in there.
Of course, they're not supposed to be in there. But yeah. When they let them in there, that was probably the right idea.
That is a trespass, Tom. It's not worthy of solitary confinement for 3 years.
Again, I don't like what they did to Trump. You know that. Way too many. Plus, I don't want to get in on this discussion because I'm never going to get there. I think the people on your side, at some point, have to have some sort of a limit how much you're going to let the guy push. And if the answer is there's no limit whatsoever, then I know where we're liable to go.
Well, we haven't hit bottom yet.
We're getting there. We're getting there. In my one man's opinion. Anyway, what's it going to do for the market? I mean, are we going to continue? I think that the struggle here should be against people that are getting all this money versus people that aren't. But nobody agrees with me. We argue about other stuff. One thing we probably should do is go for a short break. S&P futures up 28, NASDAQ futures up 149. We got stuff flying here. We got gold, everything else flying. So when we come back, we'll talk about that and why that's happening. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I am also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 28, NASDAQ futures 148. Matt Byrne might be the only sane one around here these days. I'm at the Oh, you think you're sane?
I'm trying to keep my sanity.
We're trying. It's hard to do in today's world. Dow futures up 204. Right. Individual stocks. McDonald's did okay on earnings, not so good on revenue. Of course, who puts these numbers out there? They missed by hardly at all, but they missed a little bit. They're up $4. They were up 5.5. They're 298.38, up maybe 1.4%. Microsoft up $3, 0.75%. We've got what else to the moon here? Not that much. Everything in the Dow. We've got Caterpillar up 242. American Express down 70. American Express is one of the biggest winners in the last year, 6 months. I'm going to say the biggest winners. Some of them had to be American Express and IBM. IBM is really back from the. I mean, I think it probably had been in the last 12 months for as big a winner as there is out there. But they who would have thought? I mean, years ago, people gave up on those guys. That bad idea. We're in Europe. DAX up 90.4%. FTSE up 54.6%. CAC around up 19.2%. So generally the upside there. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up 14. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 388. 21,521. So that's as high as those guys have been in a long time. Shanghai up 18.6%. Hang Seng, like I said, it's over 21,000, 21.5. Wow. Friday, not so much. The other day, the labor numbers came out. Nobody really liked those. Dow was down 444. S&P down 57. NASDAQ down 268. So we're virtually half of that on the way up here. Now, Fibonacci would be two-thirds. We're not there yet, but we've made back half of it. Bonds, unchanged. Well, pretty much unchanged. 4.49. The Bund unchanged, 2.37. Japan unchanged at 1.31. Again, we're pushing 4.5% on the 10. We were going down, and then Friday we started to go back the other way. Oil, a little bit of a rally in here, up a buck, but still 72. We looked like we were breaking out, 74.5, 75, and now we're coming right back down here. Brent up a buck, 75.86. Natural gas up 12 cents, 3.43. Was pushing $4, but as soon as the real cold spell dropped, everybody seems comfortable with the rest of the winter, evidently. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.12. I guess you don't realize natural gas, people watch the weather like hounds when it comes to that stuff. Mm. But here's a breakout. Gold up $40, 28.28, 29.28. We thought of it maybe make it to 2,900. Went through 2,900 like dinner through a goose. Silver up 17 cents, 32.62. Copper up 3 cents, 4.62. Foreign exchange, dollar 103. So it's now nowhere near the 104.5 it was like forever, but also is better than the 102 it was. So it's bouncing around. British pound 123.9. Dollar was very, very strong, and then it kind of backed off a little bit last week. Bitcoin up $1,100, 97,502. So still high, but not the 105 it topped a couple of weeks ago. A lot of stuff there, Matt. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Only one thing, Super Bowl.
Yeah, one big thing. Yeah, it's currently 7:11 a.m. on February 10th, 2025. As far as weather in Chicago, it's currently 19 degrees at Midway and 17 at O'Hare. High of around 33 degrees today with sunny skies. Tonight, though, mostly cloudy and a small chance, just about 20%, for snow. That same chance of snow continues in tomorrow with a high of 26 degrees. But I do want to point out something on Wednesday. Seems like a long time in the future, but we're looking at 50% to 100% chance of snow. Heavy snow on Wednesday is expected. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, different story. 53 degrees right now. Expect mostly sunny skies and a high of, if you can believe this, 79 degrees today.
Wow. I watched the, what used to be the Phoenix Open. It had somebody's name on it yesterday, and weather looked pretty nice.
Definitely. As far as the Super Bowl, Philadelphia Eagles, of course, defeated the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs failed to gain a point until the third quarter. Final score was 40-22, marking the end to the Chiefs' two-year streak. So I got Chief back.
This is after, what's his name? Your buddy, Jan, the coach, said you can use the three-peat. What's the guy? The guy from Miami. Then he went to L.A. But he coined the name three-peat when the Bulls were going to make their three-term. So you had to pay him every time he put a jersey out with three-peat on it.
Great marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy stuff. John, what do you make of the, since you're our attorney, what do you make of the thing going on with the Bears, with Virginia McCaskey dying and that, I'll go into it a little bit here, but John knows more than me. For those of you who were alive back in the day when Dan Quayle was the vice president, were they owned a printing business or something, Jan? Didn't they have a huge printing business in southern Indiana?
Publishing? Was it newspapers? Or
publishing? I think it was newspapers.
Yeah.
But they, his father had all the dough, right? So he put an estate together. Is it a trust? It must be a trust, Jan. He put a trust together where it's a, and I don't know if you could still do this or whether the laws have changed. I have no idea, but did something called a generational skipping trust, and if you do that somehow or another, you don't have to pay estate taxes. Essentially means you don't leave anything to your kids except control, and you jump the stock or the wealth. I don't know if you have to be a C corp or I don't know, Janet. I know this isn't your line of legal work, but anyway, all the shares, essentially the future wealth, go to the grandkids. So the person in the middle, even though he's never going to have to, you know, he's never going to have a tag day for him. I'm sure he can have expenses for being the executor or the manager or whatever he is. But technically, he doesn't have the wealth the grandkids do, right? But even though he has the control.
Yeah.
Isn't that how it works somehow? I don't know if you're executor of the will or what you are, but you're in control. Even though it's sort of like A and B shares, kind of, isn't it? But it's not necessarily that, is it? Because a lot of this stuff isn't a C corp.
Right.
But the Bears did the same thing. It was all the go at the time, as they used to say. And George was alive, and he put this thing together. And Virginia had, what, 9 kids? And Muggs, George Hallis Jr., hence the name Muggs, had 2, but they also were from his first wife, and he had remarried. And evidently, there was no love lost between the first wife, certainly in Virginia, correct?
Yeah.
And they somehow didn't want her anywhere near the team. But the flaw in this ointment is Muggs ended up dying essentially after George Hallis had given control of the team, control to Muggs. And the future was that Muggs was going to run the Bears. Well, he dies before Hallis. And I don't think you couldn't change it at that point, because he already made the trust, right, Jen, or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could break it, I suppose. Everybody had to consent to it, but the
weird part was that this was all, they all had their law firms, and Virginia was also the executor of Muggs' estate, so the kids were sort of her responsibility, right?
Yeah.
It would, you know, and her son, who was the number one son, was Michael, right, who was the original guy who ran the Bears afterward. And he, I think, were godfather to the 2 kids. Not that that matters legally. I'm sure it doesn't. But the kids ended up, and of course the ex-wife is fighting a blue streak. But somehow or another, they sued because the law firm that she hired to help the kids out was the same law firm that was representing the Bears or something. Anyway, there were 2 or 3 court cases, believe it or not, in the family. And the wife, the ex-wife, won 2 of the cases and never got a dime. I don't think I've ever heard anything like that. Have you?
No, but it doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, they said, yeah, was it Kirkland and Ellis? Kirkland and Ellis represented both sides. That's absolutely not what you're supposed to do. They found in her favor, but they said, oh, by the way, the outcome would have been the same, so you don't get any money. How would you ever know what the outcome would be if you're represented by somebody independent? How could you make that determination? Well, then she sued to see if Muggs had been murdered, right?
Yeah.
Because Muggs was a good friend with Greg, who was just here. Greg is relatives of this Greek group that owns the series, and they owned Excelsior and Eastone Brokers Inn, which became the new Board of Trade building. And he's a nephew somehow in there. And another dude, Billy Osimos, his dad, played football for Purdue, and he owned Orlando's. When he first came down here, it was in the building just to the west of 175 West Jackson. It was called, the 175 is the Insurance Exchange. That building is called what? The Insurance something something, Jan?
But yeah.
And there was a bar restaurant down there called Orlando's that Billy's dad owned. Well, Muggs was a big buddy of Billy's dad. He'd come in there all the time. Remember Abe Gibran, the old coach? He'd come in there, and they'd all hang out in there. And everybody loved Muggs. Well, so Muggs is a member of the Union League Club, and he's over playing racquetball at age, was he like 40-something? Playing racquetball, has a heart attack, croaks. This is right after this, you know, this will had been put together. So, all hell breaks loose, as I'm mentioning through. So they do some kind of an autopsy, and his wife, ex-wife, decides they needed another autopsy to see if he was killed. Well, they exhume the body, and they find out that all the major organs are gone and filled with sawdust. And now one of our buddies, an attorney, says that he probably was an organ donor. And that's what they do if you donate organs, right? I mean, I didn't know that. How could the family not know he was an organ donor? So they say, okay, we exhumed it. We don't know what happened to the organs, but oh, by the way, you lose. Okay, then. We can't prove whether he was drugged or not. The intrigue is unbelievable. Just before the places were worth $5 billion. What did you make all that?
Well, God knows what it would be like today. You know, you could have a whole crime series season about it. The question really, I think, as a Chicagoan, somebody who was not, you know, part of this, you know, sports elite, and, you know, couldn't get into a Bears game, you know, for love nor money myself, even if I wanted to, probably. But what are they going to do with the team? I don't see any of the McCaskies hanging on to this thing. Maybe they did while Virginia was still alive, but now I suspect they're going to be able to engineer a sale. I'm not sure to whom or what will happen, you know, to whatever plans they have on the table here. But I think that's probably the more interesting question going forward, because they'll have to be thrashing this out when it comes to divvying up, guess what, out of this pot for a long time. And there'll be lots of lawsuits to get to some result in that as well.
Well, but I think, John, legally, Virginia has, she owns 20%. And, they're going to sprinkle that to the grandkids, right? So they'll distribute her 20% out.
But right, the family has, I think, close to 80%.
Well, the house kids got brought out by Andy McKenna and Pat Rand?
Yeah, but I think McKenna, well, his estate only has...
His estate somehow to give... But Ryan's...
It's a small percentage, but yeah. McKenna, I think
Ryan's
only like...
Ryan's got the other 20%, I think, or
yeah,
control.
Yeah, 19-point-something. It's, you know, but I think 80% is McCaskey control. But well, by then, it'd be family.
But there's, that's what I don't know if it's a reason why I'm stumbling here, is if it was a C corp, you can have A and B shares, right? And C shares, that's what Google and those places have. But if it's a trust, I don't know if there's anyway. The control is with the equivalent of the voting shares are with Virginia. Now, if they give that to George, who's now the son running the place, then he can keep the grandkids essentially at bay for a while, right?
But yeah, how long? I don't know.
If he has voting shares until he croaks, probably. But this is kind of weird. When, you know, we're all Americans here, although sometimes I wonder today whether people are or not, but that's another issue. My brother, these people have... Well, he marries the lady who lived two doors down from us, right? The family on the one side was very Eastern European. Nothing wrong with that. But the old man croaks, and the oldest son gets the metal place. Total control of it. Just the oldest son. And the idea is it's almost like a generation-skipping trust, Jen. This is the way they did things in the old country. He controls the whole thing, and... the other guys can bitch all they wanted, but they got nothing and like it until he died. Then they would get their share money wise. Then they could split it up. The idea was you preserve the business because it was the business. You had employees, you had things like that. And that was more important than your kids wanting to just sell the place. And I thought that was just so un-American. I couldn't believe it. This is when I was young. And as you age, sometimes you. Then I look at what happened to Jay's Potato Chips. Canfield's, Romano's Beverage, right? If all of a sudden, you know, the old man dies and there's five kids, one of them maybe wants the building or wants to run the business, the other ones don't. I think it sort of happened to Wrigley too, sort of. Well, it was more of a divorce thing. And all of a sudden the other kids go, I don't, or especially the in-laws, I don't even like your brother. screw him, let's sell it and take our money, and why would we want him to run it down the drain? So the I think this sort of allows that not to happen, because I have to believe 7 or 8 of those kids, or 5, don't care anything about the Bears. Let me get this straight. Do I get an $800 million check, or I worry about the Bears and get my measly $10 million a year or $20 million a year share? What do you think their vote's going to be, John?
Sell.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that I suspect there's enough numbers on that side, because look at what they get as opposed to just riding along on, you know, the cash flow generated by this.
I think they're all getting paid, too. Well, rumor has it they all got some kind of a job there. Were they doing
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they may be able to parlay that into something else down the road, too. But I suspect that the lump cash they would get out of the sale, after the team is, the operation is valued fairly, they would also have to make a lot more that way. And they could invest that and do something else with it, instead of just, you know, coasting along on some kind of an income stream. So, if I were that age, and you know, if I had seen control, you know, held the way it's been for, you know, however many years, and now, you know, out of respect for your grandmother, you might want to not strip, you know, the team away from her or the family, but I don't think that kind of sentiment's going to continue much longer.
Well, John, it's an insult to have to get along at $25 million a year. I mean, nobody, we wouldn't even
Can
do
you
that.
Imagine?
We wouldn't even do that to Matt Byrne, but. You know, if somebody like me was involved, when I say like me, actually maybe can use a calculator once in a while, not as good maybe as I used to be able to, but if you have a business, now they probably know how much they're making, right? I'm going to guess, I could be way off, but I kind of chart it a little bit. I'm going to say they're making $200 to $250 a year, maybe three, as an owner of a team. Their lease is cheap. I think they get a chunk. Actually, it might be more than that, because I was under the opinion that that all the stuff they got from the radio or TV, not radio, went for the salary cap. But now it appears they get way more than the salary cap. So if that's the truth, then I'm going to say my numbers are light. Pick it up. Say it's $250. If the place is worth, I mean, you and I would value it, John, if we're a couple of people looking at a 6 flat, and our interest rate was, 5% we could borrow at. Well, if it's $250 a year, then how much is it? It's worth $500 million, right?
Potentially.
Can I do the math? I mean, it's the simple math. What is the cash flow of $250 million a year at 5%? It's $500 million. 10% would be $250 million, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know people can't do this much anymore, but I could still do some even without a calculator. If the bid for the place is $5 billion, which it might be, you're somewhat of an idiot not to sell, in my opinion. Now, here's the intangibles. It's a club. All they seem to do is go up. And for some reason, our government, whichever side you happen to be on, that's why when you start picking sides like this, to me, it's kind of laughable. Our government, for some reason in the last 20 years, has found it okay for some people to borrow way less than the rate of inflation while the rest of the people are paying way more. So in inflationary times, which we still are in, if I can borrow at 2% and the inflation rate is 5, I should borrow all I possibly can, and unless I buy total clunkers, how can I possibly lose, right, John?
Yeah.
And some people have been able to do that. And maybe some of the NFL owners or some of those people, who knows. But obviously it's a club. Why the thing is not more competitive, I have no idea. But it isn't. So having all that said, the club is probably going to be valued a lot more than my numbers would tell you it should be. All right, so, but now it's maybe 10 times more. Are we looking for 20? Are we going back to 5? What are we? I mean, if it wouldn't surprise me that if my numbers said the thing was worth $1 billion, that it wouldn't go for 1.5 or 2. But 5? You got to ask yourself, John, is it always going to be that way? And there's always going to be people, no matter how much you charge for a skybox, somehow come in, how much you charge for tickets. I don't know. I mean, because we both have talked and agree once in a while, that somehow 80% of the people aren't doing so hot. At some point, is that going to come together or not? I mean, in the 20s, it did. Maybe it won't this time. I mean,
in a climate where it doesn't really matter if you have a winning team or even a team worth watching at all, that you can still have a decent income stream from it. I think that the Bears are proof positive of that.
Well, you can't get it. Try and get a ticket. Try and get a ticket for next year. You can't get one.
Right. So, I could see what they might say, well, this is about the easiest money you can get, and we'll play along about moving the stadium and, maybe get some tax breaks along the way. And let's hang on to this thing because it's safer. And we don't have to worry about having a decent team or not. That's off the table, really. Would that be good for Chicago fans, the ones who are desperate enough to want to follow this operation year after year after year? Well, maybe they won't like that, but there's not much they can do about it. I think the profit, the money's going to be too much for them to look away from, and I think you'll see them, sell. And I don't know what this will do to efforts to keep a team in Chicago or not. And at this point, I don't really care anymore. But it will certainly make people hesitant about making any plans for real estate or, building some kind of facility if the team is not likely to stay here. So.
Well, I mean, but what you just said, though, I use the term regressed, not mentally, but you've regressed into this is a quasi-monopoly, even though it's not baseball. Now, in a normal world, if you bleeps want to leave, go. Put up a sign, City of Chicago looking for football team, have stadium. By the way, the rent's $6 million a year. Come on in. Somebody would be there in a nanosecond. You and I could raise that money, right? We'd be there in a nanosecond. Oh, no, you can't have another team. Well, why? Because the other 30 guys say you can't. Well, who the hell are they? Right? I mean,
This is why I feel blissfully removed from the whole thing, Tom. I don't really care what they do. I don't think Chicago will take a hit if they stay or go, or who owns them, or if the McCaskies hang on to it and move someplace else. To me, it's like the city has so many more important things to worry about. We shouldn't even be.
Well, we're going to get Art on in a second, but I'm going to lob one at you, John. And you know this stuff, but you mercifully on yourself do not keep it front and center like I do during the show all the time. I wish I could just.
Right. I'm. It's a luxury, though.
Let's just say, for instance, one of these nights you wandered down in the downtown. You actually showed up and wandered up and said, I'm going to buy a round of drinks. Both of those things are somewhat improbable. just saying. You, of course, realize that you're paying a sales tax for White Sox Park.
Yeah.
So you should care. And I know you do. I'm saying, yes, at
but
some
I don't
point,
care enough to give them
you're not gonna, to you're give not gonna
that sp- operation any more of my money.
Well, but I'm saying, but every time you open up the wallet down here, you do. Every time we buy lunch down here, we're paying for White Sox Park. The young people that come into downstairs in the bar and some company will have a party and all these young people pile in and they give them open bar for an hour. I'm going to say...
McCormick Place and other stuff too.
No, right? No, actually it's separate. What's that one? It's a... I think the sales tax is for Sox Park. What's the other one for? How does the Pier and Expedition...
The Metropolitan Pier, all that stuff. Only in the geographic portion of the city.
I think the Metropolitan Pier gets hotel tax. One gets sales tax and one gets hotel tax, right?
I think the pier tax is on it's a portion of the sales tax. I thought.
We'll have to look that up. That'll be your job. But one of them, Sox Park doesn't get anything from the hotels. I don't think. Where Pier gets a bunch from the hotels. I thought Sox Park was like a 0.25 sales tax thing. We need to look, but it's something like that. Matt, do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Hey, Odd.
She might be a little muted right now.
Odd, unmute thyself.
Ah, here I am. Okay.
Hey, I just thought of something.
There you go.
About mute buttons. Never mind. Sometimes.
Yeah, funny. I can mute it again. Be funny.
Well, sometimes when Odd and I are driving, I've already got the directional signal on, and then she says turn left. I wish I would have had a mute there, but very rarely, because I learn a lot from Odd. And Odd. Teach us
like when you go past the corner and you're like, why didn't you tell me to turn?
Oh, so. God. Oh, God. You see how every argument has two sides, right, John?
Your side and the right side.
Like, yes, it's always refreshing. What is it? Let's start a little bit, Jen. What is going on downtown with a couple of these other buildings going? But here's the hot rumor. Was it Greg telling me? Somehow or another, people have figured out now that the White Castle building, which is not that old, is not good for decisions. Too many elevators, too many something. John, is that place or odd? Is that place even 25 years old? And I want to tear it down.
I think 1990, so it's 30.
Yeah,
that's 311 South Wacker, the one.
Well, what's the tab to tear the thing down? It's like 50 stories, isn't it?
Yep.
But the tab to turn it down is like 100. Was it 100 million bucks? Some massive amount of money.
Supposedly. I've only been in the main floor there a handful of times, but it had like different banks of elevators to get the different levels, I think.
Yeah, wasn't that place? What was it? You tell me. You know, it was our buddy Doc. I don't know if they represented anybody over there, but it was finished off at a time when we were in somewhat of a recession. And John, John or Rod, you guys both know this. If we decide to build a building, high rise or whatever, we go out and get construction financing, correct? Isn't that what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who are going to take over the permanent financing expect to be delivered a building that is, what is it, 60%, 70% already rented or something? And they had.
That's John's side. That's John's.
But somehow or another, that particular place, maybe because of what Odd's talking about, the decision you had to go in there, you couldn't just go to one elevator to top. Would you need like two or three on it? I mean, it was kind of messed up. But the people who turned it over, like a lot of law firms, didn't a lot of law firms go in there, John? And they gave them, gave them like the first 2 years free for the build out or something. And then the lease might be 10 years. The first 2 years were free. So when they turned it over to the people who, the permanent financing and the owners, the permanent owners, they weren't getting hardly any rent, even though it was leased. And whoever wrote the terms of it just said leased. It didn't say that you needed any money.
Right, that there was actually rent being paid.
Yeah, wasn't it the big legal hassle when that building first opened?
Yeah, because it, put a real hole in their cash flow.
Like zero.
I don't think they were expecting. But it also, helped lease the building pretty fast. So, I mean, it was a trade-off. I don't know if it was a wise trade-off. But it was, it's a notable building because the architecture firm, Cohn Pedersen Fox, that designed it, had designed the 333 West Wacker building, the curving wall building at the bend of the river. And they were a high-profile firm, and the building was a high-profile building, certainly.
Well, it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful building.
Adjacent to the Willis Tower. And when that building has outlived its usefulness, or becomes something you can demolish with the hopes of doing what with the land, I don't know. We crossed some kind of Rubicon here.
Well, there's gotta be.
And I don't know why the elevator thing's a big deal. I think I see what they're saying is that you've got these different sections and these different little mini towers, and you think it would cut down on the congestion if everybody's not using basically the same two lanes or four lanes. But I think it was like two or three, maybe four banks of elevators for each corner, but it's been a while, so I think it makes sense. So I'm not quite sure why that seems to be a problem. There must be something else going on there.
Well, wasn't Sears Tower? Oh, we're in a trading floor. I mean, somebody did some. What do they call people who do like human motion studies or something, Jen? It's that if you had an office on the 75th or 80th floor of the Sears Tower, you had to make 10 or 12 separate decisions once you walked in the door. This escalator to this bank elevators to another bank elevators or something.
But that's that. Otherwise, it was, it's, I guess, because the building blocks, otherwise, it's just simply not going to make it. Now, I think the John Hancock building worked because they built it a different way, including that big, X architecture on it. So I think that allowed for less internal posts. I don't know, John probably knows way more about that than I do, so they could build a big elevator bank. But Sears Tower was with the stacked like building block things, I think that contributed to it.
Well, I think, I mean, the Board of Trade, you know, obviously it's a building I started in, and we were at 29 First Options, they had their office. Before, you know, before 9/11, you walked in and you hopped on the elevator and off you went. You went right to the trading floor and all this stuff. Right now, you have to take all those elevator banks, I mean, other side, all those elevator banks are shut off. You have to take the escalator to the second floor. You have to go through security on the second floor, and then you have to get out on the second floor. You couldn't give me an office in that building. I want no part of that.
But it's such a beautiful building.
But I'm saying you
are you talking about the SIBO, or are you talking about
the Board of Trade?
Board of Trade. That is one of the most beautiful buildings we have, I think.
Well, it's all Art Deco. You should see what they did to the lobby. They put all this modern furniture in the lobby, in the Art Deco lobby. It looks horrible. But, I mean, I can't imagine. I have not been up in Sears Tower since there was security. How do you even get up there, John?
Well, they used to. I mean, there was dedicated elevators for the sky deck.
I think there still is, isn't there?
Yeah, that would make sense just from an efficiency
standpoint. Because it's got that window that tilts out that I would never do that, like, hangs over the street.
Yeah.
Or the floor is glass. You walk out on the glass, yeah. You look straight down to the ground.
I'm not walking out on that glass. I'm not that trusting of anything.
Well, you know, it was talk about a wacky story. Whenever we were in New York, I always used to go to the Windows of the World, which was in the long gone World Trade Center. What was it, on the 108th floor or something, Jen? Were you ever in there? Were you ever in there?
No, I wasn't.
I talk about a view of New York Harbor and Statue of Liberty. I mean, it was really something. And but when you walk to the edge of that building, you would have been freaked out there too. Who's the guy from Smith Barney? We met him at the. We ran to Smith Barney on the floor. What the hell was his name? You remember what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. We ran him at the old car show to one day.
Yeah.
He walked to the edge. Those pillars that you saw that all came down in 9/11. The pillar is pretty thick. Well, the floor was hung on the inside of the pillar. So you could actually look between the pillars and, like, look down. It was pretty freaky. He wouldn't go anywhere near the side of the thing. And, they had the one elevator all the way to the top if you wanted to go all the way to the top. But the rest of them was all kinds of... You had to know your route if you're going to make it to the... Because the middle 15 stories had their own elevator, and you took one to there and off to another one, off to another one. And, there were only a couple that went all the way to the top. I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, an elevator goes all the way, 100 floors, for God's sake. Can you imagine the spool of wire in that thing?
Oh, yeah. Even like three First National Plaza, where I worked for a while, there were elevators that served like the first to the 25th floor. And at the 25th floor, you could board elevators that had been expressed from the first floor and then ran to the 40th floor or something. But I think to get to the very top stories, you had to take at least two elevators. There were no dedicated ones from the ground floor to serve the top stories. So it was like penthouse access or something where it wasn't like anybody could just walk in and get off that floor. You had to go through another bank of elevators. But it was all carefully designed for time and elevator usage so that you didn't have impossibly long rides on the elevator for people who weren't getting the benefit of that wasted time. And it was from a safety standpoint too that these things were easier to maintain when they didn't have as many floors to cover. So
well, you wonder what how much of the making these buildings obsolete is the security. I mean, are we ever going to go back to a time when we don't need all the security?
No. I doubt it.
Why?
Because crazies are proliferating at an amazing rate.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly can't argue about that, but the idea that the crazy just won't go across the street is, have we sort of proved that? That if you, when this first all started, John, after 9/11, my first comment was, and it ranks right up there today, if you can't protect all the people, you can't protect anybody. What's the point? You're just identifying people that you want to protect versus those you don't care about, which I'm not.
Well, you still have to hope for the best, plan for the worst, hope for the best.
All right, what's going on in retail real estate? I mean, you're still. If we don't get a bunch of snow this week, you've been. It's almost like summer. I mean, you're somewhat busy. Well, not quite like summer, but you've been busy the whole way.
Yeah, I've been very lucky and got some wonderful clients, which I really appreciate. And some of them, I listen to the show. So I have to say a shout out to Tom and Gail. They're up this morning. They always enjoy listening to Tom's show. And they were wonderful clients of mine. But it's been fairly busy. It got really busy in that little blip in the fall between October and December. We had that little breakdown in interest rates when some people got them back down at 6.5. But they're sitting a little over 7 now. 7, you know, maybe 6.99 last week for somebody, to 7.25, 7.5. And that's with good credit. So, you know, people are still sitting on those 3% mortgages. So I think it's going to be another challenging year for people who are thinking about moving but aren't quite ready. And the people who are buying, you're going to pay more, and a lot of people are just going to have to not get the house that they wanted, maybe settle for a step down. It's all about the price.
What is your clientele has been steady, but they've also been, me just listening in, they've also been somewhat narrow. It's been a lot of cash buyers. Years ago, you'd have a lot of younger people, their first house and stuff, and just, you know, I don't know that you're getting as much of that. Is it still mostly your guys cash buyers, or are they or not? You'd be kind of in that narrow.
Yeah, I think that I've got a big mix of them. I've been doing this a while, and a lot of ones who were the young first time buyers are now on their second, third, or fourth house, and maybe downsizing. And you know, by then, a lot of people who had their house for 15, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, obviously have paid off their mortgage and they have cash to do so. Your buyers, your first time buyers now, they want to get in something. The Gen X group is looking to establish some roots. You see them in there. And they're out there, and I find them to be pretty realistic about what they can and can't do. A lot of them have done their homework. They know what they can afford, and they've shopped around online at least and stuff before they've got out there. And you know, with the price of the homes have gone up, your expectations have been adjusted to what you could afford. So what you could afford at 3%, for most people, it's not what you could afford at 7. So it's going to be a trade-off. But again, you have to live somewhere. Rents are way more expensive around here, at least, than actually purchasing something, as far as what your monthly payment might be with a reasonable down payment. So you know if you want to be somewhere, you're everywhere. It's not just seems to be here and there. Prices have spread, they've gone up, or just about everywhere.
Well, you thankfully are moving along at a steady pace. Nancy, because she's been doing this forever and is really good at it, has a fairly solid business, not like she would like it to be, but she would also tell you that there's an awful lot of mortgage brokers that are doing something else, and I think there's a lot of real estate people that are, what is missing, and what's wrong with the rest of the industry, I guess my question is a bad way of saying it. Who's not working? What group is not buying?
Well, I think, this inflation has destroyed a lot of people, especially people who are raising a family and work with two salaries that are really budgeted. This isn't hurting the people that, you know, had all bought their stocks years ago, that have, you know, quadrupled with their Amazon and NVIDIA's. They're sitting on that. That group doesn't think about it. They're buying what they want. They're living how they want. But that's that small percentage. But the everyday person, or your senior who's living on a fixed income, and all of a sudden you're living on a third to a half, maybe over the last few years, less than you did. The last 3-4 years have decimated people, and they've really pulled their horns in. And you could tell that just by going out to dinner. People used to go out to dinner a lot. I mean, I think a lot of people went out to dinner, especially retired people. They went out for lunch. They would go out for dinner 3-4 times a week. And even people would go out for a drink after work. But if it's going to cost you $40 to have breakfast, or and now I see a lot of signs in the restaurants on the tape to the doors that say 50 cents surcharge per egg. So even the simple pleasures of breakfast are being taken away from you. So yeah. You just the disposable income isn't there. Your gas, your car. Just living is costing so much more and is putting so much stress on people. We've got to get this, we've got to get just under control, because it's really, it's eating away at the middle class where it always does.
Well, John, Audrey, and one of our friends, we went to some late breakfast, early lunch after the, before the Super Bowl yesterday. And we, the lady who waited on us, very pleasant, very nice. Bud and I are looking at each other, and I'm sure in a courtroom you learn how to read people, but on a trading floor you certainly get to read people. And it's not like I'm going to take a shot at waitresses or anything. I'm not going to. But I said to Bud, how much you want to bet she has a real job during the week? She's a single mom, has like two kids, and she's doing this for some extra scratch, and Bud would not take the bet.
Oh, no, you have that all wrong. I said she's the single mom at home with one or two kids trying to make ends meet, probably recently divorced.
That's right. And I added the part else. That this is not her real job. I bet she has something else. I bet she does something else during the week.
Yeah, you did. Okay, credit where credit's due here this morning, will you?
Oh, God. All right. But I mean, the ladies who work at Fox's, Jen, they all work like two nights a week. And they all have, what, one's a speech therapist and... What do the other two do? I mean, this is all over the place. Everybody has like a job and a half.
It's a job where at least you can go home at the end of the day with some cash in your pocket to pay for groceries. And, look at milk. I mean, if you have to keep your kids in just milk and eggs and bread, I mean, what did you say eggs were this week? $8?
Well, get a load of this, John. I go to the Restaurant Depot.
I'm going to go get a couple of chickens and put them in the backyard.
I go to the Restaurant Depot. I've been buying eggs there forever, right, because I cook in the office for people. And, of course, I have my Depot card, even though I'm not a restaurant. Pays the no people. You got to have people, right, Jen? I usually get 12. You can either get 15 dozen extra large or 12 dozen jumbo for the same price usually. Anyway, so I've paid as low as 19 and as high as 35. Guess how much on Saturday?
Yeah, God.
95. So if you bought 15 dozen, it's $6 a dozen. That's wholesale. Plus, they had maybe a third of their normal amount because they didn't want to get caught with them if the prices ever went down with all those eggs. What are you going to do with them?
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll just buy a couple at the store. I go to the store. The cheapest ones are $8.50 for large. I ended up paying $9 for jumbos, which is a better do, by the way. It's scary. I mean, it's really something. And, I don't know what... I don't know what people are doing here with this stuff because, in your business, I mean, the thing that I don't know if I mentioned it to you. I was talking to somebody at the Tripoli last week, and I just out of the blue because she listens to the show, and she goes, she's got across the street from the church, that big condo building. She got a place in there. I don't think those condominiums are that big. She wants to redo her kitchen and some stuff in the living room, not even the bathroom. First guy wants $55,000 just for the labor if she buys everything. What the bleep is that all about?
Nobody wants to work in downtown Chicago in the elevators.
Well, whatever I'm saying, the
plug your stuff up and down. That's fun, and then get your truck stolen.
But how much stuff? It's not that. What do you? But how many people do you have where somebody will do an inspection and say, "Oh, you got to do something with the electric box or the kitchen or something," and all of a sudden people get an estimate and they'll go, how much? I mean, isn't the price shock of repairs incredible?
It everything's incredible. I truly think I'd love to put a couple chickens in the backyard.
Yeah.
They don't allow a rooster.
You can't have roosters. Wondering... They're too noisy like your average male, but that's okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Audrey, I'm wondering if you can kind of help me. Because I've been talking, friends of mine who have listed houses that they're trying to sell, and didn't get too many nibbles. Rewrote the narrative in the ad, said the property was, two flat rather than single family, which maybe they thought it really was, but you could try to get people interested by marketing it to a different group of buyers. But what do you see as taking place in your business over the last 5 or 10 years with the way property is marketed, that anybody can look at an MLS listing, get a virtual tour, see all the pictures you could possibly want to see of the interior, read a description of it, kind of imagine what's hokey or what's true about this. How has it altered what you do as an agent when you're trying to attract somebody to actually go and look at a place, given the amount of information they can get without talking to a broker?
John, that is such a wonderful thing to talk about, because I've been in this business long enough that when the internet started, they thought it was going to be the end of real estate.
Right.
But I found that it is such a valuable educational and marketing tool that it actually has enhanced the business. It actually has saved real estate agents an incredible amount of work, because most of the time now, by the time we get somebody, no matter what age, what their first time, last time buyer, whatever, they've already educated themselves to a certain degree. Now, have they got a couple come to me with a few wrong ideas or a few, things that aren't going to happen? Yes, but if they say, wow, I'm looking to live in, Burr Ridge, and I wonder what stuff costs there. And they're going to start poking around. And they're going to say, wow, maybe I better go look over at a different suburb or something. Maybe I can't afford to be there. Or maybe I do like that. Or maybe I want a more urban feel, and I'll go look at LaGrange. So a lot of the process that we spent years ago educating people on what areas were like, what they cost, what you could get, I think it's been a boon to many people. I think it's enhanced our business in a lot of ways that we would never have dreamed possible. So it's, I think it's been great. I think it's been great. It's only been better. I'm interested to see where AI is going to take us with a lot of this stuff. We're all starting to use it a little bit, but it's, as far to your point about marketing and your people, what drives me nuts, because, there's been research done that you have 3.5 seconds to attract somebody's attention when they're clicking through pictures. When they look at the first picture, and they look at the first sentence or two. If you don't grab the client with professional pictures, great descriptions, they're gonna keep moving on. They'll give you maybe 2 or 3 pictures, they go, not so much. So you really, I find that something that I think that I'm pretty good at due to my English background and did some writing and things back, that you have to look at it where you have to make this picture look great. You have to make this description excite the realtor and excite the potential buyer. And you better do it the first couple sentences to get them to keep on looking. So that's where a lot of times that it comes through when we can get these staging empty properties and getting beautiful professional pictures and drone pictures, everything that's going to bring that buyer, to you in the market. That's, right now it's getting more competitive. If it's not a property that's absolutely beautiful, it's sitting a little bit. So you better make that property look the best you can, because I'm noticing more price reductions now on things that are not absolutely show shape ready.
John, I'll add to that a little bit.
That's a long answer to your short question.
I'll add that. Well, John, let me add that a little bit, because way back, I don't know how long this was, Aud went and took, of course, I was kidding her all about it. She went and took a class on staging. And she's there is such a thing, a registered stager. And I'll say this about her. I'll give her grief too, but nobody is more particular about the people she has pictures on the place. And instantly says these are no good, or you can't take the picture from behind the tree, you can't see the front window. Aud has a sense for it, and I think she learned a lot at that class and knew it before, of what shows and what doesn't. And it's a stunning how much better her stuff looks I mean, sometimes even her friends list the place somewhere else, and they go, "Oh my God, who did these pictures? The man in the moon?" They make the place look worse, not better. It is. You can either embrace it and say, "This is my marketing tool," and somebody looks at the pictures and goes, "Man, I want to live in that place." Or you make sure that the living room doesn't have so much furniture in there you can't see the walls. All the little stuff that it does means a lot.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I then appreciate that. I have to say, here's my pet peeve. And if anybody, when you're hiring a realtor, I don't care who it is, and you look at the pictures and they take a picture. First of all, if you're trusting them with your home, valuable home, that's 4, 5, 6, whatever, you know, 200 million, whatever it is, and they show up with just their cell phone and take pictures and then take a picture of the bathroom with the toilet seat up and the boil exposed, I never quite understood that. So, you know, nobody wants to see just that. So everybody should, every home seller should take a look at those pictures and say, does that look like it's going to sell my house?
Well, if you don't mind saying, what's the tab if somebody lists a pretty good size house? What's the tab for really good pictures and the drone guy?
I would say depending on, because usually goes by square footage, and I have a couple of photographers I use, so I would say anywhere from maybe, on a 3,000 square foot house, anywhere from maybe 300 to 700, 800, depending on what you're doing.
What are the drone guys cost?
So the same company will do them. Everything is, you can do things separately. You can just have interior, exterior, aerial shots, night shots, virtual tours. It depends on what you're spending. But I would say even for your average house, you're probably running anywhere between 150 and 2.25 to get, you know, nice pictures for a house that's going to help market it. And, you know, that's something the real estate agents pay for themselves.
Well, I can't go get a drone, because if I did, I'd have the thing over at Flanagan's house looking in his windows, poking at him and stuff. just bugging him.
Call the police on you.
Just bugging him.
I think the drone shots are some of the most useful marketing tools. I'm not looking at properties, but when I do check out real estate listings and see drone shots on there, I think those are the most helpful things for a lot of buyers, because they get to see, here's where I can garden. Here's where the sun is. Apparently, I can tell by that shadow. This is all going to get lighter. Well, things that you couldn't really tell, maybe depending on when you looked at a house physically, and if you're just looking at a ground level view of it. So I'm just impressed at how that can really feed into people's curiosity about a place and answer questions for them. So.
No, I agree with you, and it really does give people a sense of, like, what if you don't live here and you're not familiar there? What's the neighborhood like? Are the houses close together? Mm-hmm. You know, is there a park behind me? So, yeah, I think, again, to your earlier question, does the internet help? Yeah, it does. Look at how much it would be something you'd be looking at, John. So, all amazing, fantastic developments, and I've got some people that take amazing drone shots. They do a great job for me.
Jen, there's all kinds of drone rules. I was talking to her drone guy one day for a second, of course, bugging him.
You got to have a license.
Well, you need a license, but also you can't, well, she's, I don't know how you define the street, but Audley's lives at 151st. Well, 151st is kind of a main drag. He goes, oh, no, the drone can't be over a main street. Evidently, it can be over a side street, but it can't be over a main street. If it conks, they don't want to land it on some car. I mean, if you got any kind of traffic flow, and you got to stay away from the neighbors, you got to be a certain number of feet over the neighbor's property. It's not, to get that license, you got to know what you're doing. It's not, you can't just like you and me getting one of the box and running into the neighbor's hot window or something. Plus, I mean, and those things, those pictures are pretty darn good, and they can zero in pretty good.
Also, you've got to be pretty good drone pilot to get those really good pictures. It takes a lot of. I've got one guy who literally was flying between a forest of oak trees to get the right shot.
What was the one group wide you had where they found the there was a piece of grass in the backyard that was brown, and people were all worried that there was like some subterranean something going on there, or something dead was buried there. What was that all about?
Oh God, I don't even want to talk about.
Oh no, yeah, but. You don't want to uncover like a 48 Cadillac rusting in the neighbor's backyard. You might want to leave that one out. But
an unknown septic tank, previously unknown septic tank.
Is there any refis? What are there any refis at all, other than divorces or things like that, or no?
Well, you know, the only time you see a refi is somebody who maybe has had to get into something, and there are some people with 9 to 10% loans with bad credit, and when they got better over a period of time, they've refinanced down, you know, in the 6s and 7s. So there still are, because if you could get out of a 10 or 11% that you had to take, and still get down to the 7, it's still a saving. So, you know, there's still situations that help people. So it's still going on.
So if your credit was real horrible and you got a real crummy one, and as you improved it, you can maybe go lower.
Absolutely.
Well, that's cool. Anyway, we hope we're not going to get. We can handle 3 inches of snow Wednesday. I'm not so anxious for the 6 or 8. Are you?
No.
I don't mind.
You know what? You don't want it a foot. That screws the business, right?
Well, I like the I like snow. It's going to be spring pretty soon. I've got a snow blower. Yeah. I'm good.
I agree.
Man, if you had a snow blower, you get out there and then you guys are going to think I'm totally nuts, more than I am. Wasn't there a show? Is it still on? What about in Minneapolis? They have a show about, trick your ride on there if you got the funked up car. They actually have a thing in Minneapolis about snowblowers, where people call in and talk about their snowblower. What do you got? Well, mine's like 5 horse, and I can like flip it 50 feet in the air.
Well, that's
like,
Minnesota. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually people who, they love their snow. Anybody who's out with their snowblower hopes the guy next door doesn't have
it. Ramblers?
So he can do his
too. Let's get Ramblers.
All right, we got a dash, guys. SP Viewers up 36. SP Viewers up 125. Thank you both. Good job, Matt. Back tomorrow. Stacks for Jacks.
Sounds good.